And welcome in to our noon hour. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace from out here at Hermitage for our celebrity golf tournament to benefit Souls for Souls. Weather has been great, a little hazy, not too hot. Some cloud cover, which is always nice when you're going to be out and about. We'll be teeing off here very soon. In the meantime, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Joe Rexroad, Pete Weber, a star-studded lineup. And now we add Jonathan Hutton to the mix from Hot Mike. So, Hut, what do you think? Now, we've got an esteemed panel here ready to grill you with the questions. Are you ready?
I am not worthy based on that lineup. And hello to everyone, and what a great cause that you're supporting there with 102.5 The Game, and of course with Hermitage, which is a solid golf course too. I'm very jealous. It's a really great day to play some golf.
So let me hit you with something we were just discussing, and this is more of a sort of a media strategy question with the Kevin Byard issue. Why do you think he didn't talk to the media yesterday? Do you think he's going to, or do we suspect there's just something he doesn't really want to get into the conversation? Do you think he could possibly table it until training camp?
I think that, personally, I think he's going to speak to the media either today or tomorrow. If I recall, Jeffrey Simmons spoke to the media on the last day of minicamp last year. Look, I think that's out of respect for Byard, but also it gives them a chance to get face-to-face with Byard whenever they want, whenever he's actually in the building, which he hasn't been around. So maybe they're using the extra day for that benefit too from the team's perspective. But the mandatory minicamp, you know, for Byard, he should be there. He's not taking the pay cut. It doesn't appear as though the Titans want to cut him. So from that angle, it appears it's all fine. I think beneath the surface, though, there have to be some repairs to the ego slash handling of things on both ends from a guy that has been there and done that and has waved the team flag first. And, you know, you went to him first this offseason looking for him to take a pay cut based on the direction of how they're going to build this defense moving forward, which personally, Willie, I took the ask for the pay cut more as a signal that they're not going to invest a ton at the safety position moving forward with Rand Carthon the way they did with John Robinson, and he was trying to start earlier rather than later.
Now, Hutt, in that situation, obviously, I think Byard is looking at it more so from – I would be surprised if he's upset with the franchise, if he's upset with Rand Carthon or Mike Vrabel, because he has to understand that this was going to come, that they was going to ask him to take a pay cut. Now, whether he – you know, they should have is a different story, because he's been one of the guys that – you know, and I said it even last year toward the end of the season when he wanted to sit guys out. Kevin Byard chose to play, and he had a hell of a game that night. So then why would you go to him to take a pay cut? Do you believe if he doesn't, or better yet, do you think this whole situation has been handled and they just hadn't said anything and they're just going to move on from it? Or do you think there's going to potentially – you know, be another round of this, you know.
Well, I don't know.
Ask Mace, to pick it again.
Help me with this, Mace, because I don't know how you handle it at this point, because it's not like they want to extend him, right? It's a different, it's a different way of going about it. I don't necessarily think that the repairs come with some type of bonus. And I don't think it comes down to him actually agreeing to take less money. Personally, I think he's there. You know, compared to Christian Fulton, who's wanting an extension, I think Byard realizes he's not getting that, and the Titans don't want to pay him what he's getting right now, but that they also can't afford to lose him based on his impact to the roster. So I think there's a mutual sense there of why he's there and the Titans' approach to it. I just think they went about it the wrong way. You know, there's a way to approach a player of his caliber in a fashion that's not just abrupt and insulting. Players are always going to take that as an insult. But I think the way it got out, you know, wrote a narrative that was different than maybe the way that they wanted to portray it. And we haven't heard from Kevin, and we didn't hear from Rand Carthon until the owners' meetings. So we were allowed to paint our own narrative to it, and they did so through the agent, which is the way Byard should have done it.
Now, I do like what you said there, that they did not ask him for an extension. Hey, let's rework the contract. Let's push it out, add some more years.
Which adds more money up front for the player. That's what Brady would do. Brady got the praise for helping the cap, but he got more money up front, which didn't count against the cap that year. The Titans weren't doing that with Byard.
Well, my thing is that, okay, they haven't done it. If I'm Byard, now I'm in a position like, listen, find me a trade partner because they're going to cut me next year. So find me a trade partner now. I come to camp. I do anything because, like, you know, Rex said, they asked him to take a pay cut, but if he doesn't come, then he lose money anyway. So I'm going to come so I don't lose money, but find me a trade partner because you're going to cut me next year anyway.
Yeah, I wonder if, you know, is there a trade partner? That's the thing with
it's tough to find one. It's a lot like the Henry situation, right? It's like, okay, so let's hypothetically say they were calling around about Derrick Henry interest. There's only a handful of teams that would have the mentality of bringing in Derrick Henry who requires bulk carries. And there's only a handful of teams that would trade for Kevin Byard that pay safeties. And most of them already have a high-paid safety, or they have a disgruntled safety like they do in Arizona, and they would be trading one for the other. So it's a different position than trading, you know, a wide receiver like we saw last year, or an offensive lineman like we're going to see with some veteran movement this offseason still to come.
So with this situation, taking it a little bit beyond Byard, you know, we talk about Rand Carthon in this situation, huh, right? You know, rookie GM, how did he approach it? But I personally look at big decisions like this and conversations like this as Carthon and Vrabel. I mean, that is how they want us to think about it, right? It's a collaboration.
Yes.
So do you feel like this has a potential, like this situation and others, to maybe alter Vrabel's relationship with some guys in that locker room compared to what it was before when it was clearly John Robinson, then Vrabel?
Yes, I do. I mean, but see, the structure was different because not only was it the general manager, it was also the president, right? Like you had Robinson as at the top tier right behind ownership. And now you've got the general manager and head coach in a joint presser talking about collaboration. So, but also this, I don't think Vrabel is worried about rubbing players the wrong way. I do think that Carthon can play the bad guy. And he's certainly being mentioned more than Vrabel in this sense. But they're always looking to tinker and maneuver the cap. I just feel like they could have done it in different ways this offseason if they wanted to go all in with a rookie quarterback or so on and so forth. I feel like the mentality of how they're going to rebuild the roster isn't going through the secondary, specifically at safety, the way it has in the past with the allocation of money. And, again, I took it as they were trying to speed up that process rather than wait a year and determine what they're going to do with Byard's deal and what they do with him moving forward on the roster. But yes, I mean, it is a collaboration, no different than, you know, last year, Joe, we viewed the Malik Willis. That was a John Robinson pick, right? This is the Will Levis I view way different. This is Vrabel with Will Levis. This isn't Rand Carthon with Will Levis because they've done it in back-to-back years now. So I do view the structure way different than I did a year ago.
We'll come back with more with Jonathan Hutton on the other side. Jonathan Hutton with Hot Mike, with Hutton and Withrow, having a good time with that show. Jonathan joins us every Wednesday here at noon on 102.5 The Game. Stay tuned. You're listening to Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. We're out here at Hermitage for our charity golf tournament, which is to benefit Souls for Souls. Stay tuned. We're coming back. Back here, Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5 The Game, 106.3. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Joe Rexroad, Pete Weber, joined by Jonathan Hutton. We're talking Titans here. Jonathan, it did seem like there was a ton of buzz in the media sessions after the practice yesterday. Anything catch your attention?
Well, look, I was listening this morning to Robbie and Rexroad, and I thought Joe did a great job early on just going through all of the tidbits from the field. Especially like the detail on what Vrabel was up to during practice. Look, I think the news this time of year, Willie, is way overhyped. I can't recall ever referencing anything in the month of June when September rolls around, except for an injury. And I think this time of year, it's also it's more or less not the mandatory practices, but the OTAs. It's especially important for the young players and the new players. It's certainly not being overplayed from this angle of Tannehill getting into rhythm with Treylon Burke and this new offense, right? And I think the biggest takeaway is the offense certainly looks a bit different. It looks like they're scheming guys open. I take that to mean we didn't see much of that. I certainly didn't in the past couple of years. I think that's a great sign. And aside from that, it is who's there and who's not there. Byard was there, and Christian Fulton is doing what Simmons did last year. It didn't work for Jeffrey Simmons. I don't know why Christian Fulton feels like it's going to work for him.
Yeah, so let's get your takes on that. I mean, that's the one. And the other one that really I'm worried about is Elijah Molden. I really was high on him a couple years ago. He had a lost season last year. I'm starting to worry that he may become irrelevant here if he can't stay on the field.
Well, he's going to have to prove it. He's going to have to play safety, right, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, he certainly – I think he's like the third safety. I think he's like a guy, if he's healthy, that is in different looks this year at least. But he's certainly a good fourth corner, like a good fourth corner. Then there's a gap, right?
Blitzer, he's a guy that can do that. He's got that skill.
But I'm with you. I think that's the underrated story from yesterday is Molden not being out there, because he's not – he's only not out there because he's physically unable to be out there. That's not good.
Yeah, and then it's happening a lot of the time.
And that's been a storyline for this entire roster for the most part, too. I mean, I was looking at the list. I totally forgot that, you know, the players that were coming off of, like, the ACL. It's crazy the number of injuries and the rehab process with all of that. The big one, too, is you're right to mention Molden, but I really want to know where Landry is on this rehab. Mm-hmm. Because he's had a full year by the time the season gets here. And it is so different player to player that it's really hard to know until we see him on the field what he's like. With that being said, though, Robert Woods looked good coming off of an ACL and then didn't impact this roster at all a year ago.
Well, yeah. I mean, I would caution, fans, when you're dealing with an ACL, especially now. We saw they haven't had a good history of guys coming off of ACLs that next following season, whether it's Bud Dupree, Taylor Lewan, you just mentioned Woods, guys even before that.
And they've invested in those players, Mace.
Exactly.
About it, and then they've signed them.
And it's the same way with Harold Landry. Obviously, they signed the contract before he got hurt.
Right.
But you can't expect him. I would be surprised if he's the player that he was prior to the injury. I think it's going to take him even another year, because you got to understand, he spent all year rehabbing. He didn't have 300-pounders leaning on him. He didn't have to dip that shoulder low and get low to the ground and push off. He didn't have to engage in blocking. He was just, getting that knee ready. So, to me, it's going to take another full year. He might start to come back to form. Maybe in the middle of the season toward the end, but I'm not. I would be highly surprised if he picks up where he left off.
And they need that badly, badly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's the thing. The Titans are due for some luck in that regard. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like it's like everything that could possibly go wrong health-wise, including the guys lately who have come off the ACL clearly not being ready. They're due for some luck. Maybe, Landry was incredibly durable before he had the injury. Maybe he's one of those guys, who is a quick healer. But I want to ask you, Hutt, about Tajay Spears. And because I have enjoyed watching him in a brief period here. He does look explosive out there. We all know there's, some kind of limit on the time frame here. But what do you think of just that selection and, what he might be able to provide this kind of new-look offense?
I am intrigued from this angle. Injury, whatever aside, having seen him, and I watched the bowl game exclusively, but I've seen bits and pieces of what he's done in college. You've seen him up close yesterday in this offseason, Joe, so I'm curious if you agree. But I feel like he's more – he can be – he has the potential to be a three-down back. He's not this year, but I do feel like we will see more series adjustments to him. We saw a bit of that towards the end of the season a couple of years ago where they'd give Henry a series off or two. And they would throw a couple of guys in there. But I think this can be his role. And aside from just being the third down option, they're always going to look to that, and Henry's going to be on the sideline, unfortunately. But the three down back for the future can be him. The uncertainty, of course, is always going to go back to the injury history. But as far as his availability, his consistency, the numbers that he put up on a consistent basis in college, I like the pick from that angle. I just don't know, as far as the injury issues, how much that plays a factor based on reports that came out, not before the draft, but after the draft through Rappaport.
It is wild, like the cutting accelerator. It's like that guy has a knee thing, you know, like
or doesn't have a knee. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't have one, can't get it hurt. But no, I'm with you. I think next year it may be Spears and Haskins, although I don't even know. I mean, Spears and someone potentially could be the combo next year.
Well, here's the question for you
Haskins
guys.
Is just built different than Spears. That was the misconception I had when they drafted both guys. Like I was like, they just went running back on day two again. Now, when you see him and you watch him play, it's just a different style to him. And I think that garners more of the indication of where we're headed for that position than Haskins.
What do you guys think about just the run-pass ratio this year? As Derek, you got a new coordinator.
A great
question.
You got
Derek Henry a year older. Mm-hmm. You've got a team that has been, over the last 3 or 4 years, maybe the team that runs the ball more than anybody else, at least turning and handing the ball off for sure, up in there. I don't know if it's 1, 2, 3, but we know it's high, right? Do we think they're going to start coming off of that, even if it means you have to take a step back to take a couple steps forward?
I'm fascinated by this. Yeah. But here are the caveats, Willie. Mm. They gave up a lot of sacks on first down. They're facing second down and 13 quite a bit last year. So they're in second and pass pretty often, third down and pass. So with that being said, if they improve their pass protection – I would also say I need to know what this wide receiving core is capable of doing, because that may also dictate what Kelly calls, even though he may want to call more passes. They may have to go through Henry and run him into the ground based on certain down and distances just because it's Burks and bust. Okonkwo is huge in all of this, but they've got to have another possession guy that is, number one, consistently available for the roster, and number two, reliable. That actually wants the football in a big moment. Doesn't have to be big numbers, just big moments aside from Burks. And Burks has got to be the number one. He doesn't have to be a number one in other offenses. He is their number one, whether anyone likes it or not. So I hope they treat him that way. That's number one for me. And number two, I hope he's every bit of what they believe he can be and is currently, because based on their investment this offseason at the position, they're telling us they believe that. And he's got to come up big. With all that being said, I still think it is you can tell based on what Carthon has said in any media availability, this is still the same type of mentality for the offense. It's built up front. They're rebuilding the line, and it's in the backfield with Henry. They're capable of passing and having better success. I just don't know if the roster is currently constructed to give us any indication that it's going to be considerably more than what we've seen just based on the talent that they have. This is the same head coach last year that said they want someone that can just catch the football. I mean, they haven't upgraded all that much considering when he said that. So I'm still skeptical that we'll see a big jump and increase in the passing plays.
Can you see this, though, Hutt? Because I think they want to try to figure this out. I agree with you that Treylon Burks needs to be that number one wide receiver. But what may surprise you with me is I believe Chigga Conquo needs to be their number one pass catcher because of the potential he has and the matchup problem that he presents each and every week. So I can see the Tennessee Titans, especially with there only being three preseason games, that you're going to see them come out and try to establish themselves as a passing team to see what they have in Burks, Chigakonkwo together with Spears coming out the backfield. So you might not see a lot of running a football, especially not with Derrick Henry at all. But you're going to see this new look, and they're going to see if it works in preseason. And if they believe it works in preseason, then they could potentially sort of implement it during the season.
And Joe, to Mace's point, I know you said this morning. Okonkwo, it's evident that they're scheming for him, right, based on yesterday's practice?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he had the play of the day, which was a post. He beat Hooker badly and, you know, great catch. And he looks bigger and faster, which, again, he needs to be able to do everything in line. So, that, you know,
there's no excuses to take him off the field.
Right. I think he's going to be
exactly
a huge part of this. Yeah. And I agree.
And if they get Delaney-like production from him, that is massive for them based on the attention that they have lacked at that position. Not at the tight end position, the passing game this offseason, at least from my vantage point.
Well, maybe that's part of the answer to my question, because they have had so many two tight end, sometimes three tight end sets over the years.
Yes.
And that leans – I mean, you can still use them to catch passes here and there, but it still lends itself to more of that you're going to be running more than anything else. If that changes a lot, then that could mean a little evolution, a little higher percentage of passing.
And the offensive line, are they –
sorry,
Joe,
go ahead.
Pass protect? Yeah, sorry.
Yes.
That's another big part of it, right? I mean, are they comfortable leaving at least one of those tackles on an island?
But let's also point this out. Like, they've gone two and three tights in the past couple of years, but they've really only had one receiving option at tight end. They didn't treat anyone else like a really big threat. Now I think if Wiley can come in and just be an option in the passing game, they can have two tight and actually throw the football, and we're not going to just either assume run or, if they throw to a tight end, it's going to be this guy, not the other guy on the field. I think they were too predictable in that area, and I think they've drafted for that position both last year, this year, the last couple of years, to help them out in that area if they want to pass more out of what could be some heavy sets.
Hutt, great stuff. Enjoyed talking football with you as always. We'll do it again next week.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Great job on your end as well. I love having the different voices. Not saying I don't want Caroline there. I miss hearing her voice as well. I will say, sorry for the background. I found the green room here at 6th and Peabody, and, of course, Bailey Zimmerman decides to do sound check right outside the window here where I am. So I was walking down the corridors of the distillery trying to find a good spot. I failed to do that. So if you heard background sound and music, that's my bad.
We did. We heard golf carts. We heard birds.
Exactly.
We have
there you
sheep
go.
Not far from us. So we got all the ambiance that you need.
Hit them straight.
All right. Jonathan Hutton joining us from Hot Mike, Hutton and Withrow. When we come back, we will continue on with Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. We've got some other topics to toss at you before we hit the links here for our charity golf tournament to benefit Souls for Souls. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace coming at you here from the Hermitage Golf Course, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Pete Weber here with you. Guys, you know, the big story, as we know, in the last 24 hours or so was the merging of the PGA with the LIV, if you will, the $600 billion Saudi Public Investment Fund, the PIF. You got all these letters. You got the LIV, you got the PIF, you got the PGA, alphabet soup.
And that's all going to be established on a PDF when we read it.
And there we go.
I don't think any of the three of us are watching every PGA tournament every weekend. We all probably pay attention to the general stuff. We watch the majors here and there. But the big story, of course, is it looks like the PGA was sort of bought. And they looked at all the options and they were like, at some point, we're going to have to come to reality here. Mm-hmm. They've got a ton of money, and we're better off joining them despite all of the ramifications of where you think that money comes from, all of that stuff, rather than try to compete with them. Mm-hmm. One of the more interesting takes that I have read since then, and I shared some of the ideas with you guys, Derek, you saw it. Yep. Andrew Brandt is a guy that we had on the show a number of different times over the years. He's got a unique perspective, I think. He's been an NFL agent. He's also been an NFL front office guy for the Green Bay Packers. So he's been on both sides of the negotiating thing that goes on, right? And he's also a big just professor, if you will, of the business of sports. I think he still teaches a class. I'm not sure if he's still teaching it. For a while, he was teaching at Villanova. He might still be doing that. Wrote a really interesting take of what the next step is, where you could be sitting there saying, well, who cares? You know, I'm not really a golf fan. Don't know much about it. You know, that's golf. But his point is the money that some of the big oil companies have is so big, and you couple that with the fact that the American sports franchises and leagues are getting more and more value every year. He used the example of the Washington Commanders. Mm-hmm. $6 billion. The most messed up franchise
without
going.
Question.
It's really messed up, but it's still worth $6 billion. And there's
that
not a lot
messed
of,
up, maybe 10.
Yeah, and Pete, you remember, I mean, Jack Kent Cook, right? A guy that you've told many stories to me about. You know, the days of just a guy or a woman owning a team, it's harder and harder for one individual, even a family. Those days are just going by the wayside because not that many families have pockets that deep, even though they have a lot of more money than you and I have.
Sure.
The three of us have.
Yes.
But that's a lot of money we're talking about to buy a franchise for $6 billion.
Is it ever? And, yes, I see that's where we're going. Individuals owning sports teams, what are we going to say historically? Is it going to be – is Robert Kraft going to be the last individual?
That's a good question. Like Steinbrenner family, like but there's
Jerry
less and
Jones.
Less. Yeah.
Yeah. And Jerry Jones really had to extend himself to get to that point.
So here is what Andrew Brandt writes. Saudi money – money from Qatar, other Middle Eastern investments are coming to bigger American sports. These entities have invested already in English Premier League soccer, Formula One racing. Their American toehold now is golf, which in some ways they now own. The price of entry into the core four American sports leagues, NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL, is becoming too high now to rely on a cadre of multi-billionaires to purchase them. Josh Harris is one of those billionaires. He already owns the 76ers.
Yep.
He owns the Devils. In hockey. But he is struggling to secure proper financing for the Commanders right now, which is the price tag is $6 billion. So his point is LIV is now a part of the PGA and represents an inflection for sports finance. So with institutional investing allowed, PIF, among others, would not be a problem. The NBA has loosened investment restrictions to allow for sovereign wealth funds. Other leagues will soon follow. So maybe not this year, next year, but someday, he says you can count on them getting into, when I say them, I'm talking about some of these outside similar kind of entities that have just so deep pockets that we can't even fathom it, they could get into the top four leagues.
Yeah. Will it happen to the Ottawa Senators since they're an NHL franchise up for bid right now?
Yeah, $1 billion. The Senators are worth $1 billion, we think. It's right. They haven't announced what it is. That's what most people are speculating. You think about how far that's come. Like the original Predators were what, Pete? $75 million?
$80 million?
Yep.
And the Senators, when they came in 31 years ago, $50 million.
And they're about to sell for $1 billion.
Well, that's a drop in the bucket for that Saudi money. But they have endless money. Like, it'll never run out.
It does seem that way.
And the PGA, because they were sort of in this litigation with them, and then the PGA finally figured out, I guess they, listen, we don't have enough money to fight this. So what do? You join them. If you can't beat them, you join them. Now, the problem here is they joined them without notifying the players.
A membership.
A membership. A year ago, you shunned at those that chose to go to live, and you revoked their PGA card and all this other stuff, and you made it. There were guys that could have gotten generational money, more money than they have ever made, you know, on a PGA tour. But you made them feel bad, and you pointed the finger at live and said, no, y'all can't go over there. Whoever goes over there, basically, you're not wanted here in the PGA. And then you go get in bed with them the next following year.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem that I'm having. It's like the hypocrisy. I understand money rules everything. It does. If you have enough, you can get just about what you want. So that's not the problem. It's how you sort of – it wasn't even sort of – how you shunned every the guys that went over there, the Mickelsons and the Johnsons, the guys that went over there to make extra money, to make life-changing money.
Yes, sir.
Even though they were making money here, but – they had made more money with Liv than they had made in their whole career. You shun those guys, but then now you said, oh, forget about that. Forget what we were talking about. Let's get in bed with them. Let's, you know, make them a part of what we're doing. And now, like Andrew Brand said, they basically own the PGA.
Oh, yeah. And so that's one thing. But how would it be if let's say it's a family owner, Pete. Let's take Art Modell back in the day.
Yep.
He loved the team, but he didn't have enough money, right? And so he needed the deal, and he didn't get the deal, and he sold out, and he was a villain forever. But if an Art Modell in that type of situation said, you know what, I'm tired of just scrambling and doing
and
all these things.
Competing against this big money.
Yeah. And I have an opportunity. My franchise is worth $2 billion or whatever that number is, and some entity of oil money from wherever says, I'll pay you cash right now, $3 billion. I wonder if that will happen someday. And I just wonder how a fan base, even they say, okay, we're going to keep it in whatever city.
Yeah.
How would they feel, or how would the league feel if you're just sitting around looking around going, hey, this franchise could be worth, somebody's willing to pay this money. That's good for everybody else in the league. But
the league is happy with that part.
Right. But how do they feel about that? How do the fans feel about it? I do wonder if that's coming. Someday, where you're like, who owns our team?
I don't think they are.
Are you worried about
see,
that?
See, the NFL is, I think it's different. Well, you got to know. It's a good old boy network.
Right, it's a
not,
club.
Not
it's a
in
club.
The sense of what the old good old boys was. It's a good old boy network that once you're in, you're in, and we're not looking to sell off like the new group that just bought the Commanders. Once they're in, they're in. They're not looking to sell off. They would rather you hand it over to your family, a family member, than to sell it off. Why? Because to them, they want to keep all money in house. It's not
sure.
It's a ATM machine. Why would you, unless you're having, because if you look at each franchise that has been sold, say in basketball or football, over the last 10 years, why have they been sold? Controversy.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't because, oh, we just got tired of being a part of this league, so now we're going to – it's an ATM machine. Nobody's really looking
But there are still franchises that become for sale here and there. Like maybe it's
but
just somebody
typically,
wants to cash
it. But it's typically a some kind of scandal going on with the person. They said
a lot
something.
Of times, the Carolina Panthers.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not like, you know, oh, I'm just tired of it. Because if they're tired of it, usually it's a family member – whether it's the daughter or the son or the siblings, they take it over.
But now when you're talking about inheriting a team, they've got to have some pretty good lawyers because Jack Kent Cook's kids could not take what we then called the Redskins and run that team.
Mm.
That's how Daniel Snyder got in.
Right. But so
but it was getting ready to happen to the Titans.
Well, I wonder about that someday. But do you guys agree – before we go to the break, this is the statement that Andrew Brandt makes. He's pretty up on this stuff. Saudi money is coming to American sports leagues.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not this year, next year, but soon.
I think eventually it will, if it hasn't already. But I think it will be more of the pie, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I think it'll start not in football, not in basketball. I think it's harder to start it in hockey even. I think it's going to come in the major leagues. I think baseball is going to be that sport.
Well, baseball did already with the Seattle Mariners when they were sold to the electronic gaming company in Japan.
That's right. Yeah, that was a while ago, right?
Yes, quite a while ago.
Yeah. Interesting thought from Andrew Brandt there. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll have the final segment of our portion of the show where our hours are a little bit different today because of our charity golf tournament. Derek and I are going to hit the links here in a few minutes. And sorry on the front end for our teammates who have to deal with us.
The suit is coming.
Could be hacking.
So he's good.
Could be hacking. Suit. The suit could be helping us out. But that's not even the suit.
Yeah, I thought that was a suit for a minute.
Yeah.
I thought a beard.
All right, our final segment coming up next. 12:51 is our time as we get ready to hit the links. Chase McCabe is scheduled to come in on the cart. Oh, now we see the suit. Here he comes. He's coming around the bend.
Yes.
Coming around the bend.
Now, it's not just a beard.
Yep.
It's the beard and his shirt.
And hopefully not somebody coming the other way full speed, because it's just like the old bullpen car, Pete, from the 1970s.
Yeah.
And remember in the movie Major League, Tom Berenger, Jake Taylor, the catcher, he's trying to find – he's got to get to the girl, and he's got to get there quick, and he can't get to his car. So the guy says, just take the bullpen
car. That's right.
So – Chase is coming in a la Jake Taylor from the bullpen car. All we need is the old Cleveland Indians helmet on the top of the golf cart.
Yeah,
You're like the fireman. You're like the fireman coming in from the bullpen.
I'm ready.
How's everything going with the tournament right
now? Things are great. I got to say this. Country music, rock music, superstar, he's here. He wants to play, but he's got CMA Fest this week, so he's got a lot that he's doing with that. But I just got to meet him. Super nice guy. Really appreciate him for taking time in a busy week to come out. So that was cool. That was kind of a highlight. So I like his music. But it's cool to have everybody here. Brett Kern's here, just retired. I said, how's retired life? He goes, great. I'm doing this every day.
Okay. The beginning of retirement, it gets old quickly.
I'm sure.
Yes.
I do have to report. So one of our raffle items is a football that we have two footballs, I should say. One, our entire staff signed, our game staff. And the other was reserved for you must have played in the National Football League. Mm-hmm. Chris Sanders has signed the ball. Brett Kern has signed the ball. Derek Mason has signed an entire side of the ball and has won the award for the largest signature.
The largest signature
on the football.
Yes, I love it.
I handed the ball to Kern, and he just goes, wide receivers. And I said, Chris, I gave you your own side. And he's like, nah, I can't do that. D. Mace is bigger than me. So it was pretty funny. But, yeah, no, this is awesome. And, Pete, you know, you're here. Crispy's holding court up at the clubhouse, so that's been fun. Getting to talk to him. Saw Nick Barnaski's in the house.
Did we qualify Barn as a celebrity?
Yes, Barnyard.
Yeah, Barnyard's a celebrity.
I mean, he's got stories.
He's got stories. He can't tell most of them.
He's going to be under it. Well, on the golf course,
if you got the name and you got stories,
you're a celebrity.
Yeah, Pete.
You're here.
I feel
Pete,
like
celebrity.
Barn would be an underrated guy to play with if you're a Preds fan, because on the golf course, maybe you could get him loosened up, you know, share a few
We can loosen him up with Sambuca. That was the key one night in Las Vegas.
That is some of the nastiest stuff.
Yes, it is, Derek.
Oh, my goodness. It tastes it's
I didn't
awful.
Mean to turn your stomach.
Oh, man. It takes me back to my rookie days. Oh, my God. My rookie day, that one night
rookie
we went
hazing.
Out.
So who was responsible for giving that to you, Derek?
Mel Gray.
Okay.
Mel Gray. We went out, and then, you know, the rookies, it was actually – my night was right along. It was Joey Kent's and my night to pay for, you know, the guys that came out. Usually the offense and, you know, some stragglers that'll come in once they find out the rookies were paying.
Yes.
Oh, let's go get a free meal. So we get there, and this is back in 1997.
Yeah.
There was really nothing out in Cool Springs. There was one restaurant that I remember we went to. It was a seafood place. I can't remember their name right now. But so we come in there with 15, 20 of us. So they have to set up, you know, a table for us in a room and whatnot. So we go to the bar and we sit in there for about a half an hour, 45 minutes. So we have been, never in my life had I had a Long Island iced tea.
Never in my life had I had
a Long Island iced tea. This time I chose to get a Long Island iced tea. Not just one.
Oh, the first one goes down.
Oh, it was so good. Not just two. I think I might have had three or four.
Oh, yeah, you were.
Oh, my goodness. And then I go.
You were on the floor.
And then I go and sit down. And
the room is moving.
And we're eating and having, you know, we're enjoying. And I'm sitting at the edge with Mel Gray. And Mel said, hey, young buck, hey, take this right here. He gives me Sambuca. Never had it in my matter of fact, I've never heard of Sambuca before.
Sounds exciting.
He gives it to me.
It's never good when somebody calls you young buck.
And he said, just take it. Shoot it.
Shoot it.
Shoot it.
Oh, my God. goodness, I almost gagged it all up.
Yeah.
That was some of, I said never again when I touched that. Even a smell, just like, ugh.
And I like drinking cough syrup.
Exactly. I can safely say, after that night, you know how some people, when they've been drinking and, you know, they may have had a little bit too much, and it's a struggle for them the next morning. So they wake up and say, Lord, I will never drink again. Just get me through this day. And then they end up drinking again the next day or
yeah.
2 days later.
Have you ever had Galliano?
No, I
haven't
had that.
You ever? Have you had that?
Yeah.
We refer to it on the trip I'm about to go on as the devil's pee.
Oh, my goodness.
That's basically what it is.
If it's that bad, then I don't want. Yeah. But I can say that night was I held on to what I said. If you get me through this, I will not drink again. I didn't drink another thing for
anything.
8 years.
8 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
It took
After
me
that
eight
night.
Years to drink something.
All because of what Mel Gray did for you.
It was just that whole night. When I smelled alcohol, I got sick.
Yeah.
I got sick. When I wasn't in my right mind the next day. I couldn't practice. I told him I had food poisoning. I couldn't practice.
You said food poisoning?
Yeah, I said food poisoning. Yeah,
what a way it was. Way.
Fish
it was food poisoning.
Was this Titans? Or?
Yeah, this was Titans. Yeah. This was my rookie year.
So Fish bought that? You had food poisoning?
I don't know if he bought it.
But he understood.
But he understood. That damn huddle smelled like a distillery. Anyway. But, no, I said after that, I said I would not drink again. It took me 8 years to be able to pick up another drink.
Wow. So I know what I'm not going to get you a bottle of for Christmas.
Please don't. Please don't. Unless you want to drink it and you give it to me like, here, dear.
Joey,
I'm like, well, thank you, Pete, but here you go. You can have it back.
Joey from Bellevue said, I tried it once and vomited right away. I probably would. I've never had it. But
Oh, my goodness.
Barnyard liked it.
I think Derek was present the night I tried Hennessy for the first time.
What was that report?
Yep.
It was interesting.
Okay. It was very interesting. No.
It was
a good night. It was a good
something.
Night, but it was
That is for sure. You two are going to go play golf.
Uh-huh.
Pete, are you hanging out?
Well, I'm going to take off, I think.
Okay, you're taking off. Okay, Pete's taking off. So I'm going to hold it down. We'll have people coming through here.
Caroline is pulling up in a minute.
Caroline will be pulling up in a little bit, so people can jump on. But we're live today, Hermitage Golf Course, our second annual Music City Celebrity Golf Tournament presented by Gary Force Acura and benefiting Souls for Souls here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.